Most weight loss programs are short-term fixes, but managing your weight needs a long-term solution. And that's what makes Noom different. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, a couple things to talk to you about. First, Rotoballer.com, proud sponsor of the show. Great products over there, premium products, premium tools, premium Slack chat, articles, a lot of free articles as well. A lot of great stuff over there. You know, I write a lot of DFS content at Rotoballer.com for baseball and football. We have a lot of season-long content for baseball coming up, even as the season winds on down. So go over to Rotoballer.com, join the premium package, use promo code Bubba for 10% off the package of your choice. Also, if you are into fantasy sports, which you obviously are if you're listening to the show, and you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports, and you live for the short-term gratification at DFS, then you have to try it out. You have to try out Owner's Box, everybody. It's a weekly fantasy sports game on Owner's Box, WFS. Not DFS, WFS, weekly fantasy sports. Head on over to rollerballer.com/box and sign up today. Weekly Fantasy Sports is the best of daily and season-long. It keeps you engaged throughout live drafting and new multi-week games. Owner Box will be playing out users who bring their friends on board. Watch the real money rewards pile up through their first-ever three-tiered referral system. Add friends, create groups, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. So basically, you sign up. You come play at Owner's Box. Use rotoballer.com/box to sign up. Then you bring your friends in. And you get a little kickback for that. You have your own leagues, weekly leagues, talk all the trash, have all the fun. Hey, but that's not it. In honor of the NFL season going forward, Owner's Box will be matching your first-time deposit up to $50 when you head on over to rollerballer.com/box and sign up today to claim your rewards and join the new wave of weekly fantasy sports, a WFS for all you lovers of fantasy sports. Weekly fantasy sports, Owner's Box, rotoballer.com/box for a $50 deposit bonus. Now, to this new episode of Benched with Bubba. Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of Bubba and the Bat Flip, episode 53. Going to talk some more two early mocks for everybody as the ALCS and NLCS are running strong right now. Hope everybody's enjoying the playoff action and getting ready for, yes, we are getting ready for 2021 season. Find me on Twitter at BDEntric and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. Toby, how we doing, man?
Bubba, doing all right, you know, just plugging along, taking a little breather, I think. I mean, I'm still involved in the two early mocks, but trying to take a little downtime from fantasy baseball outside of the podcast, and started watching Succession.
Great show. Phenomenal show.
Me and my wife were watching that. We're enjoying it so far. So
yeah, it gets better too. Season two is wild.
So, oh, does it? Yeah. Enjoy. The character Greg is our favorite.
Greg is very special. Yeah. Craig is very special. Definitely the redheaded stepchild in the bunch, but totally. He's special kid. But
for sure. Yeah.
So
outside of that, I was saying before this, I've started my DFS journey in football, which I have been enjoying, and I lost out on making like $4 when Badgley missed that field goal. So outside of that, you know, I shouldn't even had a kicker. Probably. No, but if I'm doing it right.
In certain showdowns, you can. It makes sense. Yeah. But it's okay. Now, instead of staying up until 2 in the morning to do fab on Saturday nights, you'll be building DFS lineups. So that's all.
There you go.
Totally. Your wife will love you.
Shoot, you've seen through me already.
I have too many friends like you. I understand. So we were talking about two early mocks. We're going to talk about some takeaways from early on. We have, obviously, they're still going. I believe ours is in round 16 or 17 right now. So we have about, five, six, seven more rounds to go, give or take. But, some drafts have gone through 300 picks. Some aren't even close. So by this time next week, it'll all be wrapped up. But we have a good idea of some takeaways. And, there's a lot more to dig in and to eat up and ingest, or however you want to go about it. As we kind of hit on it last week, some early round stuff. But we'll go a little deeper this go around. And we'll start it off with some trends that we're seeing. And one that I wrote down, and I'm pretty sure you can notice it. I mentioned it with Kirtland last week. Starting pitchers went early and often. I don't know if it was, because we see the trend go every year in the main event, they start popping up, or if it was the way the season went, everyone's just kind of like, oh, crap, I need starting pitching. I don't know, but it's like I think we had 10 guys going around to an R draft alone. And I was looking at it after you get past the first, big four, like big, 10 or 12, after round two, basically, there's a couple good globs of pitchers like for round 4 and 5, round 6 and 7, like chunks of guys. And if you don't have like a good core by round 10, it gets ugly. So what's your takeaway on the starting pitching situation so far?
Yeah, I mean, our draft went heavy starting pitching early, but it looks like there's 8 starting pitchers right now who are going between picks. Well, I mean, pick 17 through 30. So really is the place where a lot of those guys are going. And I think as we talked a little bit early on, I think one of the things that we'll have to do is kind of dive in and try to differentiate some of these guys, because I think there's all of them have tremendous upside. I think all of them have some downsides as well. We've seen more downsides from some of them. Like some of them are a little bit more erratic. Like you look at Bauer going at the top end of that, and he probably deserves that, if not maybe a little higher based on what he did this year and what he did 3 years ago now, and also what he could do next year. We talked a little bit about that last time, but it's also just, it'll be really interesting to see how that kind of shuffles out and what happens to that group of starting pitchers. It is really interesting. I mean, for some reason, starting pitcher feels deeper. I think you have some guys like Carlos Carrasco who essentially performed like he had performed when he was going as kind of a third round pitcher. Going later on, you have some injury guys like Strasburg and Greinke, not even injury guy, just falling back. So I think it's just a really interesting landscape. And then even later on, there are some guys who I think are interesting. And so maybe it's just I've spent so much time this year looking at all the streamers that I was throwing in my lineups that I'm like, oh my God, like Kevin Gausman at pick 190. Like this is incredible. Like I can still draft this guy. And I feel like there's a few handful of other guys kind of going later after pick 200 that are pretty solid, but it's also hard to tell, like, is that just my draft or, is it a little bit more consistent with Gausman? It was just my draft. So that's a little bit of a bummer, but yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be really interesting just to see how the tiers, kind of filter in. Clearly those top three, but I think those move around. Like I was going to tweet kind of sarcastically, like after Cole's game 5 start, like, is he our number one SP1 yet? Again, just because he's so consistent. He's got such a good environment there. So just really interesting, I think, starting pitching. But I definitely think there's I'm feeling a little bit more pressure to get, a few of those starting pitchers early on, just based on, my experience in this last year, but also just the lack of consistency that we see and the lack of reliability later on in the drafts. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, how it all shuffles out in the end.
It's funny you mentioned Kevin Gausman because you took him at 192, like you said. You have the low on him because he went at 100, 152, 152, 130, 130,
100.
114, 141, and 148. So you got a heck of a deal. The next closest was 152. So you got a 40-pick deal on Gausman. We'll see. Well, who knows if it's a deal, but it seems like a deal with Kevin Gausman. It's interesting. Like Charlie Morton is going at ADP 140, like 150. Mm-hmm. Like that's David Price at 154. SP Schumer, Mike Simeone put out an interesting poll today about which Dodgers pitcher would you take first. between, I think it was Dustin May, Julio Urias, Tony Gonsolin, and David Price. David Price getting the least amount of votes.
Yeah, and what did you say?
I picked David Price because I'll take 150 innings of David Price at pick 150 over those guys all day long. But that's me. I felt that going into this season. I'm not worried about his health taking a year off. I really am not. I think I might benefit him, if anything.
Yeah.
Because they're already going to limit him to like 150 innings anyways. And at this point in this rank, like at pick 150-ish, but he could be your SP4. Like that's an outstanding SP4, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So that's where I was. Who would you pick?
I went with Gonsolin. You know, I don't spend a ton of time, you know, on the polls, but I like to weigh in on them. And I think with Gonsolin,
he's going at 169, so he's a little later.
He's going at 169.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I mean, I think that for Gonsolin, like, I was very impressed. I need to dive in. I think the BABIP was pretty low and the strand weight was pretty high, but the arsenal is super interesting. He was getting volume, you know, towards the end, so he was showing that he could go kind of later on. And he's got the repertoire, I think, is the most interesting thing to me. A couple pitches with swinging strike rate above 20%, which I really liked a lot. So that was kind of what I was looking at. But yeah, it's an interesting question too, you know, like, and all. Yeah, I mean, Dustin May is such a fascinating guy just to think about because, you know, the gifts are all over the place. The stuff is nasty. And I think the results have been pretty good, but he just doesn't get the strikeouts. And the Dodgers really don't seem super intent on giving him a lot of innings. So, you know, really interesting stuff. It's going to be fascinating the way all of this shakes out. And I mean, so hard to get ourselves out of like the immediacy of this offseason and to figure out like, do I feel this way every year? Like I should take a journal where I like write down like how I'm feeling every day of the fantasy baseball season to be like,
You have a journal. Look at your previous episodes.
Yeah, that's. I'm going to go back and listen to what we said about the two early mocks last time. That actually might be like kind of fascinating to do that. But it's super interesting. And one thing on Gausman, I wrote this back to somebody. I don't know if I fully believe it, but you know, he was kind of like the Lucas Giolito of this last year. You know how we were all looking for Giolitos, and there was a few of them. There was like Corbin Burns, obviously. And some other guys, but Gausman was really, really good this year.
He was outstanding. Absolutely outstanding.
He was so good. And I feel like because he was on the Giants, maybe, you know, a little bit of West Coast bias, and maybe because I don't know how many wins he ended up getting. I know he lost a couple wins down the stretch there. but bullpen. But yeah, it's interesting. But if he's going where, like, you know, everybody else was drafting him, then he's not that interesting.
Yeah, a little tough for them, but he went. His record this year was 3-3, 12 games, 10 starts, so not bad. But Gonsolin was my number two in that deal. I was really close to taking him. I guess my tiebreaker was Price as a guaranteed spot, or Gonsolin does not. Mm. That's the way the Dodgers operate. If I knew Gonsolin was penciled in, I'd be there. And if you look at the two early mock ADPs, Dustin May is going around pick 129, Julio Urias around 143, David Price around 154. And Gonsolin about 169. So it's almost every round you're getting another Dodger starter. By the end of pick 170, the starting rotation might be gone, they will be gone because Buehler and Kershaw are to be there. So that's what I'm saying. There's six Dodgers taken in the first 170 starting pitchers. So there's five in a rotation. It gets a little interesting with that situation. And Dustin May is crazy. Like we've talked about him here and other places, but he's such an electric factory. Like pitcher list and pitching ninja just gif him to death. But he doesn't strike guys out. It's absolutely baffling. It's almost like the theory I have, and I am not a pitching guru by any means, but it's almost like I think his stuff is so nasty. When the guys think they see like his slider or something, they just don't swing and pray it misses the strike zone. Like that's just what they're doing because it moves so much. I have no idea. But I remember when I was in Little League, we faced this guy that threw harder than anybody we've ever seen, and the coach told us when his hand's like right by his ear, start swinging. That was your best bet. And so maybe it's something along those lines. I don't know. They're pros. They're better than me, but something to think about.
Well, he throws that sinker a ton. I mean, the sinker's only got 4.8% swinging strike rate. True. So until that changes, and that's the pitch that we all see the gifts of, right? Because that's the one he's throwing 99 plus on. But he got super lucky this year. I mean, 234 BABIP, 89% strand rate, I think. And it wasn't like he didn't give up homers. He gave up a decent chunk of home runs, 1.45 per nine. So it must have just been that there wasn't a lot of dudes on base when that happened, but way outperforming, you know, all of his ERA estimators. So just something to consider, you know, K minus walk rate of 12.5%. So I think a lot of the, you know, and again, he can improve, he's a young guy. But I think that's, you know, something to factor in, like if you're thinking about picking him at pick 120, maybe I'll add that to my reaches.
Yeah, that I feel it's a reach because I think he's better fit for the bullpen like we saw tonight in game one, at least until he figures out that sinker thing. But a few other guys, like I took Herman Marquez at pick 179, and everybody knows I'm anti-Rockies, but, you know, we saw what he did last year or this year even, and it's pretty good at that point. I'll pay for him compared to the other prices we've seen. But I just have a couple questions for you. So Chris Sale, who missed the year, obviously, he went to pick 118 in our draft. He's gone as low as – he's actually not drafted in one league right now. Otherwise, he's gone as low as 212. I think
that's probably ours.
Maybe he went in ours at 118.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, and he's undrafted in another one. He's gone as low as 212. And then Shohei Ohtani went 226 in ours. He's gone as high as 124, and we have the low on him. So those are two guys coming off injuries, and Ohtani, I don't even know if he's going to be ready to pitch till at least midseason next year because they're trying to rehab him. What would you do? I'm just going to pass on those two, but what about you?
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me about Ohtani is it's just so challenging to take him outside of daily leagues where you can kind of maximize his value. I assume that somebody's going to kind of reach on him for upside, and so I have not had him in any leagues of importance, and I don't expect that to change necessarily next year. I think that could change if we find out that he's going to be a full-time DH, you know. I think that there's certainly value there. And then Sale, I mean, generally I stay away from those guys, you know, coming back. Like if there's a price attached to them, I stay away from those. You know, we've obviously seen some guys like Lamet, right, who came back and was just lights out from the get-go. Certainly Sale could be that guy. But it's really hard to take a guy at that point in the draft with huge injury concerns when you're not quite sure, you know, when he's going to come back. Obviously, we'll have a better sense of that when we get closer on. But I don't necessarily think the Red Sox, you know, competition window starts next year either, you know. And so I don't think they're going to be in a hurry to push him and to give him a ton of innings, you know, because they need to, you know, I don't know what their plan is yet for how they're going to get, how they're going to go through this kind of youth movement that they need to go through, because I don't think they're going to get a bunch of high-priced free agents given the direction that they're going. So it'll be interesting to see what they do on the trade market. But anyways, that's our long-winded response to, no, I probably won't be drafting Chris Sale early on. That's how my brain works, unfortunately, for you, Bubba, and all the listeners, is like, I start talking about something, I'm like, that's something interesting over in that direction. And, you know, that's how it all fits together as a puzzle in my mind, I guess.
Toby's mind is a Rubik's Cube of fantasy baseball. When I look at the ADP, and I'm not going to go over any more guys on the list, but I recommend people check it out because I think it's a good tool to use. Mm-hmm. We kind of mentioned how guys were going so early. So it's like after pick 170, 180, give or take, it kind of gets a little spread out more where it's not as clumpy as the early stuff. You look at some of these names here, and these could be guys that are going to make or break your team, like some really sketchy names, some young names, some guys looking for bounce backs. Like, it's a very interesting crew that I don't mind having a couple guys. I don't really want to have most of my rotation be these guys. So I think that's kind of the takeaway I have, is I gambled a little more than I wanted to so far, and I'm going to end up with more of these guys later that I didn't want. But now I know, and we'll see. Because one thing is, I was on Triple Play Fantasy last week, and they had a fun game where they used two early mocks ADP from last year
and
compared it to NFBC's ADP in June. Who rose and who fell. So that was interesting to see the differences there, because like recency bias is a heck of a drug in two early mocks.
I got to go back and listen to that. I haven't really been consuming a lot of baseball podcasts recently, but those guys are awesome too. Triple Play, shout out to you guys. Always such a fun time, like the games and everything like that. That's really interesting. I mean, those are super helpful exercises, I think. And, you know, we were talking about the journal earlier, but I mean, these are the types of things that we have to be thinking about. Our minds, like, I mean, think about like too early mock ADP, like Randy Arozarena, right? He's going at an ADP of 116 prior to us finding out that he can't hit anything that isn't a fastball. And so now all the Astros are drawing him.
Real life Pedro Serrano.
No, but I mean, like, it's just things like that, right? Where like, that is not going to be the case. Well, I mean, he could go that high. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there could be the chance that he does that, but it's just like, you know, people have that in their minds. And so there's a ton of recency bias going into this. And so it's a really interesting just exercise, I think, to go through. I'm really interested to see, to get a hold of projections. Normally we get those, I think, after Thanksgiving is when Steamer releases theirs. And so I'm really interested to see what that, you know, what that tells us. But yeah. And then, yeah, I mean, there's just, this year is so going to be so different, I think, than a lot of other years. It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah. It's interesting. You mentioned Rosarena, cause I'm looking at guys going right above him in ADP, but like in certain leagues, guys that went after him in ADP technically. And then guys that overall ADP is going after him. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take him. And I like Randy Rosarena. I've had a lot of fun with him in DFS so far. But you got to show me a little more to take him. Like, he went as high as 96. That's a top 100 pick. That's asking quite a bit. In my book, I can be totally wrong. But speaking of hitters, that's a good segue here. What kind of hitter trends are you seeing here? Because we talked about, like, the top, you know, six guys where you can't really argue. You got Trout's, Betts, all those guys. Like, when you move on past that, we talked about the Yelichs and Bellingers. Going, like, round 3, 4, later, stuff like that. What kind of hitter trends are you seeing that make drop off or dry up quicker than we thought?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I think that's interesting, I mean, you know me, I love catchers. So one of the things that's super interesting to me is just how the catching market is developing. You have JT Realmuto, who's going, you know, pretty high up there, like much later than he should be, as we all know, at around pick 48, I think, from an ADP perspective. 48. And then you have to wait, I think, to pick 113. I think it is. I don't have it in front of me right now, but it's like pick 113 is when Will Smith is the second drafted catcher on average. And then there's just like kind of a clump of guys from 130 to 170. But yeah, I just think that's interesting. I know in the, you know, last year we had Sanchez who was up there, I think in the 80s. You also had Grandal who fell back a little bit. But that's just, it's a little bit interesting. I think people's approach to catchers is going to be fascinating this year because there's kind of, you know, there's the two camps. There's the camp that I fall in, which is kind of like, I really want to prioritize that position because I think it can be a major sinkhole. Not saying you can't win with a different strategy, but you know, that's the strategy that I prefer. I drafted in my two early mock Realmuto and Sal Perez. And so, you know, which comes with its own, I think, challenges for sure, which I'm figuring out as we draft, and which will segue nicely into my second trend. So I just think that's going to be really interesting. And obviously Will Smith has had a really nice start to the playoffs. So that's weighing in on him, kind of pushing him up. But some of those guys, I mean, if some of those guys stick around, like Grandal, again, you know, the batting average was low, but he had a really nice season again and really started to heat up once he got comfortable, or once, you know, kind of positive regression started going his way. And then you have Sal Perez, who had an incredible season, and you can't necessarily expect, he was at 120 ADP, it looks like, can't really expect him to repeat that batting average, but we've seen him be consistent when healthy, 25 home runs pre-juiced ball, you know, because he was injured for 2019. And in the middle of that lineup with the plate appearance advantage, again, you know, he's definitely going to be a target of mine, especially if I don't get JTR. So yeah, again, I mean, I think the catching is going to be fascinating to see how people kind of take that, because I think one of the things that I felt this year was that there was a lot more rotations of catchers. You know, there was a lot fewer guys who were getting consistently. I haven't actually done that research, so this is just, again, an anecdote or it could be a bias on my part, but it just felt like there wasn't a lot of consistent, guys getting a ton of run from a plate appearance perspective. So I should do some research on that maybe, or somebody else who's smarter than me, please do that. So that was
you're,
one.
You're accurate on that, by the way. You're very accurate on that.
I am. Okay. Yeah. That makes me feel good.
Yeah, no, that was a topic I wrote about in the Black Book when I did catchers last year. Thank goodness I'm not doing catchers this year, but I had to write about like 40 to 50 catchers last year. And a lot of it was like your top 10 or 12 guys were great because they weren't in a platoon. And then it got real hairy after that. So, and that kind of played out this year. Like you said, a lot of these guys, after like you got Realmuto, Smith, Perez, Grandal, either DH'd or caught, Contreras DH'd or caught, Darno DH'd or caught. The DH was tremendous for certain players. But then it got real murky after that. Like even Austin Nola until he started hitting consistently. Sean Murphy was in a rotation a lot. You had the Orioles guys were both good, Severino and Cisco, but they rotated a lot. It was a very, very murky situation. Even Danny Jansen was with Kirk, I believe it was, with Toronto. So, yeah, you had a lot of that going on outside of, say, the top 10 to 12, maybe 15 at the most. But even after the 10 or 12, they're not really phenomenal catchers. You'd almost take a platoon guy after that. So that is the tricky part about catchers, and that's where it's kind of like, do you take the earlier pick and go for it? Not JTR, obviously. He's worth the earlier pick. But after that, and get two guys, or do you just wait? And that's what we're kind of seeing. If you look at the ADPs, you mentioned the kind of globs that are there. But then, you know, we're well over 200 picks through our draft, and there's still only like 15, 16 catchers off the board. It's a two-catcher league. So yeah. It's like guys, they got their early guys, and I didn't look and see who double-dipped besides you in the league. But it's pretty consistent over all nine leagues looking at the ADP right now that – I think the only league that's really deep into the 300s is League 4, and they went on a massive catcher run in the 300s. So that's something else to keep an eye on. Maybe you get your backup catcher, your catcher too, then, because it's really like, why waste the pick if you're going for a Danny Jansen or a Max Stassi or one of those guys when you can go get maybe your SP5 or something. So something to consider. Yeah.
Definitely. It's kind of interesting. I can't remember the pod that I was listening to, but they were talking about Wilson Contreras. And it's just fascinating to me because I think a lot of people saw him as a disappointment last year. But you can see what the plate appearance advantage does. I mean, he had about 30 more plate appearances than anybody else. 37 runs from your catcher. You know, like, it's just – it can have a huge impact. So
yeah, no doubt about it. It's a big impact. And so your trend was catchers, JTR and Chill. So you're all about those early guys. Like, if you don't get, obviously, you're going to get JTR in most of your leagues, I have a feeling, because you're going to be the guy that says, you know what, I'm going to get him whether you like it or not. So here it is. After him, though, do you like have like one or two guys you have to have, or just not worth it for you?
Well, I think it depends on how it shuffles out, you know, Yadi Molina is always a go-to for me. Like if I make it past, you know, if I don't have a catcher, he's like kind of a catcher too that I love to get, guys like that. I have to do like a little bit more analysis, but you know, depending on where he ends up, you know, he'll be a guy that I don't mind as my kind of catcher too. But, you know, but there's just so many question marks. But there's also interesting guys, right? Like Dalton Varsho, you know, is super interesting. Max Stassi was really good last year when he was playing. He was injured, but, you know, he looked really good. But, again, I got to, like, kind of delve into some of these guys because, you know, the thing is we got to realize how short of a season. I mean, everybody loves Travis d'Arnaud. And don't get me wrong, like, he had a great season. You know, he also had a 411 BABIP, you know, like that's just not, it doesn't happen, you know.
Who do you think he is, Tim Anderson?
Right, yeah. Jeez. Back off, d'Arnaud. But, you know, it's just things like that that I think, you know, I think it's kind of a foolish exercise, but just go to BABIP and sort and then like cut off like the top 10 BABIP leaders and just say, I'm not drafting these guys because their price is super inflated. Michael Conforto. And then, you know, like lower down, you know, look at the guys who have super low BABIPs, right? Like your Max Muncy's of the world, who I was really disappointed to see that he didn't fall that much. I was hoping maybe he might fall in like the 150 range or something like that, but he didn't fall because I think he's having a good playoff. So people kind of forgot. But like Carlos Santana, I drafted him, I think at pick, I can't remember. It was probably 190 or something like that, 192. But I was interested to see what is his ADP. Should look at that. He's at an ADP of 200, you know? And so like he was pretty much the same guy he's been every year other than last year, but he had like a 210 BABIP, you know? And like, yeah, he's not going to have a high BABIP. He's going to have like a 250 to 270 BABIP. That's going to push his batting average to 240, 250. And you know, he's going to be super good. Although I am worried that Lindor is going to leave this summer and you know, so that lineup gets a little bit of a hit. But anyways, it's, you know, it's just, you know, we'll address like the, how do you take in 2020 type impact, but like, you can already see it in these drafts, like how high or low guys are moving based on not any type of change in skill, but change in some of the luck, the things related to luck that we look at. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, definitely production paid off a lot. Like, here's a guy, Andrew McCutchen, going at ADP 208.
That's a great pick by you, by the way.
I think he's going way too late. That guy's just ridiculous to me. He missed part of the season, sure, but leading off for the Phillies even next year, I think that's still a phenomenal play. He still ran this year. I think he had 6 steals, 7 homers, hit for a decent average. He's going to score runs at the top of the order. I don't understand. I think it's a recency bias thing, kind of what we've been hinting on here, that I didn't get. If you missed some guys early, I thought that was a fun one. But there's going to be a lot of guys like that, like Carlos Santana, like you mentioned. Where a guy like Christian Walker, who went super late last year, he's jumping up right next to Carlos Santana, which I like Christian Walker. So I'm not like opposed to that play, but you're seeing the movement of what the season can do for guys. You mentioned some things. Stolen bases is interesting because I know I talked about it last week. I took Trey Turner number 2, and some liked it. Some think I'm an idiot, which it's not the first time people thought I'm an idiot. So that works out just fine. But I wanted to get like a Turner or a Betts or an Acuna. Obviously, I'm going for one of the steals guys early if I have a top pick in the draft. J-Ram stories. I'm going to get steals early. Now, and then I guess kind of fill in. I've talked about it even last year, and the philosophy for me has not changed. Get guys that give you 5 to 10 steals if you can. Like every once in a game, if you get a big guy, you can afford to go take a Nelson Cruz. That's fine. But make sure you get it balanced out by the end. Don't rely on one or two guys to do it all for you, which we've talked about many times. So my philosophy starts out with a good surplus of stolen bases and builds on it from there. What I'm curious about with you, since you go starting pitching early, I know you talked about it last year, but how do you see it playing out in these two early mocks? How do you address stolen bases in taking your pitching early like you do in this situation?
Well, based on my two early mock, I do not address it at all. I just forget stolen bases. They're not important. Don't chase speed at all. You don't need it at all. Just lose. No, I mean, I think it's a really it's a good question. I mean, there's just so many competing narratives like happening in my head right now about it all, right? It's like, I've got this narrative about like, the pitching, the pitching goes so quick. Like not just the pitching, but it's the same thing we talk about every time, right? The volume, the foundation, the floor. In the main event, it's like, you need one of those guys who really hits. And all you need is one, really, right? It's like, I had Bieber in 1, right? And then my other guy was Scherzer. I had them in 2, actually, right? And I found a way to not do great, finish 5th with Bieber on one of my teams. But I had Bieber and Scherzer. So I had one good and one who really honestly wasn't that good, like outside of the strikeouts maybe. And then I had DeGrom and Strasburg, and Strasburg threw 4 innings, none on my team. And he ended up, and it was fine because DeGrom was good enough. And then I had Garrett Cole and Lance Lynn actually was my 2nd there. So that worked out all right with me because Cole hit. But that's all just to say, like, you need one of those aces to come through for you and you're more likely to get it. So, that volume, that foundation that you get. So like, I have that in my head. And then I realized like just the approach that I took with the two early mock, I took, actually took Yelich in the 1st round, just cause I thought that was an interesting way to try to build the team. And then I went starting pitcher. And then I went like, I think a hitter and then another starting pitcher, something like that. So I got 3 starting pitchers that I felt really good about, but I didn't necessarily address speed the way that I needed to. And that became pretty clear. And there's just not a lot of good speed options late. I'm sure that when we get there, we'll feel a little bit better about it, but just a lot of platoon guys, which does not feel good. And so obviously, we learn this every year, but you need to take that speed early. And I think one of the things is like you picked up McCutchen, which I thought was a great pick. I was thinking about him because I needed some speed. But the batting average, he's pretty much a .255 hitter. And I wasn't sure if I had addressed batting average strong enough at that point in time. Because I had drafted like a Carlos Santana and things like that. So it's just, it's the age old story of, you need to address batting average early and you need to address speed early on. Otherwise you're going to find yourself in some challenging predicaments and it's not like you can't do it. Hi, Justin. It's not like you can't do it, but you just, you know, it makes building your team a lot more difficult. And so again, we have all this pressure on pitching that we feel like we need to address. And, but then we also continue to have the same pressures around batting average and stolen bases, which are maybe even, depending on the way you look at it, either easier or harder because, you know, like, because you don't need as high a batting average to compete. True. But you still need to be better than, you know, more than, you know, yeah, exactly. Like you want to be better, like 10th in your league at that. Right. And the same with stolen bases. And so, you know, unless you dominate some other category. So again, like not anything new that we have to think about. I just think that there's maybe just a more, it feels like there's more pressure on that. And again, that could just be me, but trying to navigate what that scenario is. I think it makes guys, and I stayed away from him this time, but like Victor Robles at like ADP of 163.
Just, I was so tempted to draft him.
Good. Yeah. I'm just like, Victor, come to daddy. I miss you, you know, looking at my team construction. So yeah, I think that that's something. Whatever I just said.
He's going to be a fun one to watch. As high as 123, as low as 237. Like that is a spectrum.
Robles went at 237.
Yeah. In league two, that's going to be like, man, if you get to like 170 or later, and he went that way in a lot of drafts, I'm going to have to really fight myself to take that one. But like you're going to be looking at guys for stolen bases later. I was kind of scrolling through here while you were talking, and you got guys like Manny Margot, Victor Reyes, who I don't hate. You take your chance on Garrett Hampson and pray he plays. Stuff along those lines, those will get you some steals late, but we'll see how that plays out. I was pretty mad someone took Mauricio Dubon from me. We're going to have problems with that because he actually got it going in the second half. I'm telling you, it's going to happen.
Well, one, I do think, you know, I've said that like chasing stolen bases feels awful. Like it's a terrible experience. But at the same time, there's a lot of guys that are like that. Like you just mentioned, you know, Shogo Akiyama is another one, right? Who's stealing bases, who doesn't necessarily, you know, like he's not going to help you in home runs at all. But, you know, there's just like this idea in my head of like getting him and like a Roman Quinn or a Manny Margot. And then, you know, like combining them with all these late power bats that you can get, right? Like we have a question later around CJ Cron, whatever, however you say it. And like, but like a guy like that, where you can kind of, you know, play the matchups, you can play different ways. So I think that that's something to consider too. Again, not as like your foundational strategy for stolen bases, but as something that seems like an option every year that I haven't really been as intentional about doing. But
yeah, it'll be interesting to see where it all pans out. And once we start getting draft champions data in December, and then they start doing some other drafts in January, pretty sure there'll be some more mock drafts coming as the months get closer. It's going to be fun as we get kind of a little ways from 2020 and guys do some research and articles come out and all different things. Like you said, projections in December. Where do guys actually start to change their mind? Because like I said, that triple play deal, I need to get with Little Cheesecake over there and get his spreadsheet.
Is that David?
No, that's Art.
Art.
I need to get his spreadsheet. He's the one that made the game, so he's got to have a list somewhere of comparing the two. And there were some that stood out. Like some were pretty obvious. Like you knew this guy jumped or this guy fell. But then there are some other ones like, holy crap, people actually took this guy that early in the 2 hours mocks. Like that was recency bias at its finest. So we'll have to see how this plays out. Because like we could circle it right now. When we're talking in, say, February, I want to see Randy Arozarena's ADP.
Yeah.
Like give me that one right now because that one's – it's going to be lower. It's got to be lower.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
But it's super interesting. I mean, is he the Luis Robert, right, or Robert?
Basically, I think he's a poor man's Lou Bob.
Yeah.
Like if you think he can steal bags, he's a poor man's Lou Bob. I think he might have a better average. Lou Bob's got more power. Like it's a weird trade-off, and there's a lot of guys you can make comparisons like that for. So it'll be
a Razor End is a pretty good plate discipline too, right?
Yeah,
he walks decent clip.
Much better than Lou Bob, yes, much better. Mm-hmm. But
maybe I'll end up picking him.
There you go. There's a few other trends and strategies we'll talk about that kind of cross over with some listener questions. So we're gonna help hold that till the end. And we're going to go on some value picks that different people saw throughout all this. Toby, why don't you start off with one that you kind of hinted at some of these already, but what's your first value pick you saw in the two early mocks?
Well, one I thought was really interesting was Greinke. Greinke's really fascinating to me. I mean, last year he was going around pick 45, if not earlier, when the main event drafts were happening, and he went 83, and he's literally the exact same guy with a higher BABIP. I think over his last five starts, he ran a BABIP of 403, I want to say. I thought that was super interesting because I think he's like the same guy pretty much that he has been. And obviously there was a little bit of an injury thing, I think, in the playoffs this year. So I think he's going to fall, and I think he's a really solid, I mean, you know, it depends on who your SP1 is, but a very solid SP2. And then if you can get him as your SP3 potentially, like in some of these drafts, I think that that's really interesting because, you know, I'll get him up right here, but you know, his K minus walk rate was better this year than it has been in previous years. His swinging strike rate was also up. So yeah, his K minus walk rate was 21.2%. Had his highest K percentage in the last 3 years. Had you know, about the same swinging strike rate. You know, some of the control metrics were not as good as they have been in the past, but he still was able to avoid walks. But yeah, 321 BABIP, which is, you know, 30 points about higher than he's had in the last 7 years. And again, from a 403 BABIP in his last five starts. And so essentially what you have is this is going to happen to every pitcher throughout the course of the season, pretty much, where they have a bad month. But he happened to have that bad month, not even from like an overall perspective. I mean, what did he finish up with? He finished with a 403 ERA, a K per nine, and a 113 whip, right? But his, you know, his peripherals, right? He had a 280 FIP, a 351 XFIP. Where's that? That darn Sierra, a 372 Sierra, you know, so he's essentially the same guy, but he's dropped 40 spots in ADP for me. And so I thought that was really interesting because I've gained like a little bit more of an appreciation for who he is as a pitcher, just because he's been so consistent and he doesn't walk guys. And he, you know, in a lot of ways he's similar to Kyle Hendricks because consistently he's been able to suppress BABIPs. And that's key. If you don't walk guys and you are able to manage contact in the way that he's done, I think that that's a really good combination, especially in a pitcher's park, in a league that's now full of pitcher's parks. I mean, the way that, Globe Life Field is playing, and then you have Houston, the way it's playing, then you have the A's, the way it's playing. I mean, that whole division is full of kind of pitcher's parks, similar not the NL West entirely, but you know, used to be. So it's it's just really interesting. I think overall, I think the fact that he's dropped so far is questionable to me. But that's just me.
Yeah, no, I don't mind that at all. One of my guys would be Mike Moustakas. I really don't understand the hate for Mike Moustakas. He's going around pick 142 right now. Jake Cronenworth's going ahead of him at second base, which I like Jake Cronenworth. Don't get me wrong. I think I took him at 119, actually. But I don't mind that. But that one surprised me a bit. Johnny VR, you know, Jeff McNeil. Max Muncy, and I know I'm always like the anti-Max Muncy guy, but when I see Max Muncy and I see Mike Moustakas, I don't see a lot of differences between the two, except when I look at ADP, there's like a 40-pick difference. So that's one of those that kind of gets me a little sketchy. And obviously, there's going to be more diving into these guys throughout the offseason. But just looking at Moustakas's numbers overall, the biggest thing I take away, like, you know, the barrels are pretty similar, a little like 0.8% barrel difference, hard hit rate's the same. He struck out 6% or 5.5% more, walked about 2% more. When you look at his like overall swinging rates and chase rates and zone rates and all that stuff, he swung less. His whiff percentage was less, yet his strikeout rate went up. So to take a deeper dive, I'm guessing he was just, I don't know if patience is the right word, but his, you know, aggressiveness wasn't there. And that seems to be a trend from some of these guys that, you know, we talked about Baez and we talked about, I can't remember who else we were talking. There's a couple other guys we talked about that weren't being near. Oh, I think it was Gleyber Torres. Some guys like that, that you look at their overall aggressiveness at the plate, it all dropped off this year and they saw a decline in everything else. So you look, because you look at his exit velocities and all that stuff, it's all legit. It's all the same. His pull rates are the same. His fly ball rates are very similar. His fly ball rates are actually higher this year. His line drive rates are higher this year. So you'd expect, you know, more success this year, but he struck out a lot more. And that was a big, big difference. He only hit 230. His XBA was 242. If Moose is hitting 242, his eight homers probably turns into like 11 or 12, and all of a sudden you're happy as can be. It's that simple. He also was on the IL once in a while. Maybe had COVID, maybe didn't. We don't really know the answer there. But Moustakas is a guy, if I can get him up around pick 142, yeah, I'll take that. And yes, Mason, he is triple eligible. I give you that with Muncy, but I'll take – I just can't do it with him anymore. I give up on Max Muncy for now until someone tells me otherwise.
Man, you know what his BABIP was, Max Muncy's BABIP this year?
It's okay. He's a Dodger, so I really just – he was just bad. That's all it was, right? That's the answer?
It was 203.
Yeah, months. Yeah, that's not that's really bad. Yeah, because Moose's was 247, like 247 BABIP, but still he had a 237 ISO and a 340 WOBA. Like that's still like, if you look at all his other numbers, they line up almost evenly with every other season he's had. It's just that average was, you know, before it was 254, 251, 272, even 240, 284. Give me a 250 average with that 230, and we are just happy as can be with Moustakas. So I'll take that gamble going into the next season.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I mean, Baez is just such an obvious one, going at an ADP of 81, just such a huge fall off. And obviously, like, we talked extensively about him in previous podcasts, so I won't go into too much depth, but, you know, yeah, it does seem like it's been a little bit of a longer period of struggle for him, but I still think he produces even when he is struggling because of where he hits in the lineup. Because he can contribute in five categories theoretically. So, you know, he's a guy who I think, you know, it's a huge drop off for him. And I see him, especially being very, I think he's going to be really focused on improving. And I think he will be able to do that.
Yeah, I'm with you on him. Like you said, we talked about him quite a bit, even on recent episodes. It's for me, unless something else is said, it was his just aggressiveness at the plate. And that's a guy that lives on being aggressive. And he just, everything points to he was taking more pitches, and it added up in a hurry with him. So interesting to see how that approach changes at the plate. For me, I'm going to go with another third baseman, and that's Josh Donaldson going to pick 158. I'm kind of curious on a slew of guys going ahead of him at a position that's I know it's not deep and it's not sexy either. Donaldson still had a pretty strong season overall, and he was injured, and that's probably the bugaboo with everybody. He's getting hurt. He's going to play every day. There's a DH in Minnesota if need be. You know, hit 222 with a 231 BABIP guy. It's perennially a 290-plus BABIP guy. I'll go back to Josh Donaldson at pick 152. If you need a third baseman and you missed one, I got no problem going to him.
Yeah, I think that's a great shout, too. Yeah, another guy for me was Altuve. I know everybody hates Altuve, but
– they hate the Astros.
I mean, at 113, it just seems like such a good value, especially, you know, I mean, he started to hit during the playoffs, right? So he really struggled early on, but he's clearly, I think he has three home runs. You know, like, I mean, he's not that bad of a player. He's not that old. The skill shouldn't be deteriorating that much. And so I think he's going to be a guy that's worth another shot as well, going where he's going. So that was one that jumped out at me.
Okay. The last one I have here, this is more of a, we need to get a virtual fantasy baseball hug because it was a rough year. He had a .188 on the season, but hey, 225 X batting average. That's a positive, right? You know, the actual bacon, the hard hit was still 47.2%. Strikeout rate went through the roof. The walk rate increased. I think he bounces back next year and he's going around pick 200, and that's Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah,
throw it out there. That's a guy I know he had a rough season, short season. I'm going to kind of lean on, we're going to talk about our kind of talking about 2020 stats compared to 2019 and everything, but that's a guy, I've already said a lot of stuff, grain of salt for 2020. Like I'll take certain bits and pieces, especially StatCast stuff. And when I look at his StatCast page, there's a few things that stand out to be a little scary, but then there's some things that overall still very strong that point to good things with Kyle Schwarber, and a .188 average is not something that he's going to do. He's never been a batting average genius, but he's not a .188 either. And he still hit 11 home runs and stole a bag through all that. So yeah, he's the guy around pick 200. I think you could get some nice rewards for.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he had some things go wrong, like the ground ball rate spiking, but I'm totally there with you. Like that, I think it will be tremendous value for next year. I think a good kind of thing to do is just look at how a guy's contact rate overall changed. And that should kind of line up with how their strikeout rate changed. And Schwarber's is, you know, a 0.2 difference, and yet he had a 4% increase in his strikeout rate, you know, from year to year. And so that's clearly, you know, I think an area where the longer he played, that strikeout rate would come down. It would result in more hits, more balls in play. And I think just, yeah, like going right there, I think he's a no-brainer for sure. And I think Justin, actually, he picked him in our draft. I thought that was a really great pick.
I don't know if that's the case. Maybe I need to look some more into this. Reaches. Who's one of your reaches?
I mean, there's a bunch of them. I could go to my favorite reach, which is Vlad Jr., who just – he just always ends up up there. And we have yet to see batting average show up because his BABIP is not as high as it was in the minors because he hit so many ground balls. And I mean, obviously the power is good, but you can't have a guy who's not going to steal bases. Although I think he stole one base this year. I think I remember that when he did steal that base, but he's not going to steal bases. He's hasn't shown that he can hit for average yet. And he's still going at pick 70. I can't get behind it. I don't think he's that good.
Yeah.
And now he's going to be, now he's just first base, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He should only be first base. He's going to be first base DH eligible. Like, no, thanks.
Yeah. I don't blame you at all on that one. There's a few, like you said, that you can kind of pick and choose from that stand out. When looking at this, I'm trying to figure out how I can do this with being nice. So I'm trying to pick the right people on this.
Don't be nice.
I save that for
this. Is like the this is like the real world.
The real
world. All right. When people stop being nice, start getting real.
And so, okay, well, here's mine.
We should call our podcast.
Here's mine for you. Mike Clevenger is going to pick 61. Mm. I don't know if people saw the last couple weeks. I am terrified of touching Mike Clevenger. And this is coming from a guy that had Mike Clevenger as in my top five going into last year, if not like top three before the season started. I really loved what Mike Clevenger did. And I know I was not alone on that one. But watching everything that took place throughout the last couple weeks, and I don't know why they had him pitch that last game the way they did. It made no sense to me at all. But I would need a large drop-off. Pick 61, that's the end of round four, beginning of round five, probably your SP2, maybe SP3 if you're Toby. I still couldn't do him there. Like, he needs to be going much later. I would rather take a chance, if I were to take an injured arm, on a Chris Sale, on a Noah Syndergaard, on a James Paxton, where they're going draft-wise, over Mike Clevenger. So that one's going way too high for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I'm staying very far away from him. Next one for me is Michael Conforto. And I think this is where, like, you got to be careful of the narratives, because all I heard this year is he's figured it out. Like, this is the new Michael Conforto. You know, he's finally reached that level. You want to know what helped him reach that level? A 412 BABIP is what helped him reach the level, okay? Walk rate this year, down 3% from last year. Strikeout rate, up 1.5%. O-swing, exactly the same as the last 2 years. Contact rate, up 0.7%, right? Hard hit rate, exactly the same. Ground ball rate, up 5%. So you could actually argue he did pull the ball less than he has traditionally, which I think will help him get a higher BABIP than he usually did, but not a 412 BABIP. Like, he had a similar batted ball profile 3 years ago and had a 328 BABIP. So that seems a little bit more, you know, like what he should have done. And he hit 279 that year, right? And so, you know, his exit velocity was down. His max exit velo was up a little bit. Barrel rate was the same. So essentially, you're talking about the exact same guy from every metric imaginable as last year, except he had a 412 BABIP, and yet he's going 60 picks higher than he went last year, right? And so I think these are the types of situations that we need to be careful of, where we put way too much, you know, I think putting, looking at 2020, I think what you need to do is look at the skills. Like, was there fundamentally a skill change? And if there wasn't, I think you need to treat them as you did, you know, with previous years. If there was a fundamental skill change, then I think you need to dig in a little deeper and try to figure out what exactly it was and which skill like reflects, you know, the right thing, right? Like if it's a contact rate or something like that, put a little bit more emphasis on it because that, you know, becomes, you know, I don't want to get into like statistical terms, but it's like, because it's based on pitches, you feel a little bit better about it in a smaller sample size from a plate appearance perspective, because you're talking about pitches. It's per pitch instead of like per batted ball or something. So again, like I think these are the types of things where, and we saw how dramatically batting averages could change even at this point, the point of the year that we were in, where there were some guys who were like hitting like 350 and then 2 weeks later they're hitting 270, you know, because they got four hits during that period of time. So those are that, I think he's just like emblematic of the guys that are going to move up a bunch that don't deserve to move up a bunch.
Yeah, no, I don't mind that at all. My second guy would be Dustin May. Kind of hit on him earlier. Love the talent. There's no strikeouts, and I'm a guy that drafts strikeouts. I have to have strikeouts. If anything, I'd rather gamble on Pablo Lopez going a few picks after him, go earlier and get a Frankie Montas or Lance McCullers, which feels really dirty to say, but I know they're going to be there in the starting rotation also, or Dustin May might not. So lots of question marks with Dustin May. It'll depend a lot on what we see in spring with him, but he's a guy I got going way too early. What's a third one for you?
Alec Bohm or Baum. I mean, he was a great DFS play at like 2,700 for a while and or up to 3,000. But I mean, check this out, right? Alec Bohm hit 338 in 180 plate appearances. His BABIP was 410. His ground ball rate was 53.2%, right? So like 10% higher than league average. His hard hit rate was 27.8%. His O swing was league average. His contact rate was league average. So by all accounts, he's not that good. And I mean, don't get me wrong. He could improve and things could change, right? And I don't have his prospect pedigree. But going at pick 120, like an ADP of 120 on average, that is way too steep. Because I think over a full year, you're talking about a guy who hits maybe 270, you know, even like on his pace from this year, you know, in 180 plate appearances, he had four home runs. So you're looking at like 15 home runs. And again, like things could change dramatically, but no, thank you.
No, thank you. I like that quite a bit. My last guy, and it's kind of a, I don't know. It's a tough one for me, but mine's going to be a pick 74 is Eugenio Suarez. Mm. I like Eugenio quite a bit, but I think we saw, like 2 years ago, we saw an amazing, just absolute stud, Eugenio Suarez. I think this last year, given there were injuries involved in the situation, you know, the shoulder and all that coming back, he still hit 15 homers, but he hit 202 with a 214 BABIP. Sure, usually a 300-plus BABIP guy. Maybe there's more to like there. He had power, didn't have much else. So he supplied you decent fantasy numbers. But as a whole, I think we saw more this year because he walked more this year, which I think helped a lot. I think we saw the fantasy production, the batting average, and all that good stuff that we saw this year is more realistic than we saw in the last couple of years. So Eugenio, who I like a lot, I liked him, you know, last year when we talked about him at pick 120 or 130. That's great. That's four rounds later. Now we can talk. But right now, he's going ahead of Yoan Moncada. I'm sorry. I will take Yoan Moncada 10 out of 10 times at third base before I take Eugenio Suarez. That's just crazy to me. He needs to be going around the Matt Chapman area around pick 96. There's a lot more similarities at third base with Suarez and Matt Chapman. So he's just going too early. I like the guy, but not at that price point.
All righty.
All right. Let's go to some listener questions because this will help take care of a lot of the other stuff we're going to discuss. So as I pull them up here, we'll start with Jonathan Raymer at JohnRaymer87 asks, Trent Grisham was one of the few guys to go 10-10 in homers and steals this year. He also seems to have a solid approach to the plate. Could he be a perennial 25-25 guy with counting stats from a loaded Padres lineup?
Man, that's a really good question. I mean, I wouldn't project him at 25-25. Obviously, he had a very good season. I think he's very good. I think one of the elite things about him is the O swing, right? Like 20.4% O swing. So the dude is going to get on base. He's got that great kind of contact and plate discipline profile hitting at the top of that lineup. I think that that is all great. I do think, I mean, I should check this out, but I do think that there are some, quality of contact issues, but it's fine. I mean, maybe, but the thing that I would just think about is like, how many guys are there every year that go 25-25? It's a very small group of players. Let's see. In 2019, we had two guys in all of baseball who had at least 25 home runs and 25 stolen bases. But I do think 2020 is a reasonable expectation. So that I would maybe focus a little bit more maybe on that. Just because stolen bases come in bunches and it's really hard. You got to stay healthy and all that stuff. But I mean, I believe in Trent Grisham. And I think that he's got one of those profiles that's, I often say it, Ariel Cohen says many paths to value, I think is what he says, or a lot of paths to value, but those five category contributors where he's not hurting you anywhere. And so in any given year, if he underperforms in one particular area, he's still helping you out. So like he's got a great OBP and he hits at the top of the lineup. So those runs should be there, right? So even if the batting average isn't there, he still gets on base and he gets you those runs. You know, without the I'd be a little bit more concerned if there was the pitcher in the NL, right? Batting ninth and the RBIs and things. But I mean, the power, like anybody can hit 20 home runs now. So he can definitely do that. And then we've seen the speed. So again, great player. I believe, I think 25-25 is going to be a really lofty projection for anybody to hit just because so few guys do it. But if you were to go a little bit more conservative with like a 20-20, I think that's definitely possible.
Yeah, I'm more of the 2020 profile. Think Tommy Pham, stuff along those lines. I think he can do it consistently for a while because his average isn't great, but he walks a lot. OBP is very strong with Grisham. He developed his power in 19, obviously bouncy ball in AAA and the bigs, but we saw a little more power develop there, and the stolen bases have always been there in his career. So I can see a 2020. We know the Padres and Tingler will run. The biggest thing is, will you pay the price for him? His ADP is at 58 in the two early mocks. Aaron Judge, George Springer, Teoscar Hernandez, a lot of different Austin Meadows, a lot of outfielders right there. So that's going to be the deciding factor for you. Do you want to take him early, or do you want to wait for steals later with a Tommy Pham or a Mo Laureano or some other options at the outfield position? So that'll be the decision to make. Could he go 25-25? I'm not going to say no. Like, it's not impossible. Because he is 23, he's going to be 24 in like 3 weeks. Still super young, always possible in that lineup. It's just I'd rather go 20-20 like Toby says. I think that's much more realistic and more consistent. I think you can do it for a few years in a row. But if he put it together 25-25, I wouldn't be shocked just because I think he's more inclined to steal 25 bases and hit 25 home runs. That's where I would go with it. So, but possible. Stick 20-20. Go that route and still enjoy the benefits of that.
Yeah. And I think a good thing to think about is like this past season, there's like almost 10 guys who were on pace for 25-25. And yet in the last full season, we had only two guys, I think I said, actually ended up accomplishing that. And so that just shows you like within a smaller window with variance, guys are able to do that. But over the period of a full year, there are so many adjustments that are made. There are so many peaks and valleys. That it makes it really hard to consistently, there are so many injuries, like makes it just really hard for guys to be consistent enough to get to that level. But again, great shout.
Yeah. Let's go to Dave Petroziello. He has a couple questions for us. First off, he was really high on Luis Castillo for 2020, but he's down on him a smidge. Walk rate did not come down, although he thinks he was unlucky with balls in play. So we'll start with Luis Castillo. Are you still high on Luis Castillo? You know, the changeup is from the gods, but there's always the walk issues with Mr. Castillo.
Yeah, I was down on Castillo heading into this year because of the walk issues. And I like him. I think he's very good. I am no longer holding any reservations for him. You know, yes, the walk rate, you wish that it was a little bit better, but, the strikeout stuff is nasty. The fast, you know, I think he's really good. And I think he's been consistently good now, and he's shown like pretty good consistency. I mean, he gets chases on pitches outside the zone above 33% for three consecutive years, right? He dominates in the zone 80% or lower for three consecutive years. You know, first pitch strike, something that he struggles with a little bit off and on, but, you know, he's not atrocious, you know, 59% for his career. The swinging strike rate, two consecutive years above 15%. The K minus walk rate, 22.3%, a career high this year. You know, the Reds are a better team. I believe in their pitching, you know, what their pitching staff is doing there, to make him better. And so, you know, the ratios maybe are not going to be as high as you maybe want them to be, but I think he's now a guy who can go close to 200 innings and strike out over 200 batters and give you solid enough ratios. So where he's going right now, I think towards the back end of the second round, I think it's fine. I mean, I wouldn't want him to be my SP1 necessarily, just because we haven't seen that truly elite from him yet. But it's very, very good, and I like him.
Well, he was my SP1 in the two early mocks, but it was only because
I'd hate to be your SP mocks team.
It's the only reason why he was my SP1 because Scherzer, Nola, Bueller, Kershaw,
Flaherty, they all went.
All gone. Right. All gone. And that's the problem. If you look at ADP, it goes Scherzer, Nola, Castillo, Bueller, 23 through 26. I'd probably take Nola and Bueller over for Castillo for sure. Scherzer, we could have a discussion on. I would take Kershaw over Castillo. Giolito, obviously, over Castillo. So that's the problem. Like, I like Castillo. The walks are always going to be an issue. Let's get Castillo out of the central divisions. That'll probably be an interesting discussion next year, too. But really good pitcher. Not going to take that away from him at all. It's just his price tag might be a little too much, unless draft dictates, which occurred to me. So that's where I sat there. The other question he has is he knows we've talked and you guys have talked a lot about Joey Musgrove. Just a little hint, people.
Toby don't do it, Dave. Don't go there. Yeah.
He says, did you see his September and that K rate? Will you be sucked in again?
Of course I saw it. Who do you think I am? No, I mean, Joe Musgrove is a real beauty. Let me tell you, the repertoire is still there. It's still fantastic. He just needs to throw the ball over 94 miles per hour. If he can throw the ball consistently over 94 miles per hour, he's going to be so good and stay healthy. But has he ever done that consistently? Not really. Like that was the difference. Right. He came back and, you know, I mean, I'm sure there was other differences. I haven't had a chance to really dive in, but he's got a phenomenal repertoire. I mean, I would love what the Pirates should really do is they should make a trade with the Tampa Bay Rays is what they should do. They need one more trade. Joey Musgrove. I think Musgrove is he's going to be hard to stay away from because I think the one thing that has always kept me from – well, that's a lot. I've always been bought into him. But the one thing that I've always worried about is his ability to get strikeouts. And what was incredible about this last little thing is it was just really – it was what we've been waiting to see from him. His last five starts, he had a 40% K rate. His walks, he had a 33% K minus walk rate. The velo was back up closer to 94. I mean, it really sounds super simple, but when he's like that, but at the end of last year, he was doing the same thing. When he can get swings and misses on his fastball, he becomes absolutely devastating. But can he do that consistently? And it'll depend on the price for me, but I'll probably be in again, to be honest with you. And I think the difference this year is maybe I look at him as a, like SP4, you know, whereas in the past, what I would have done is like I would have got my pocket aces and maybe waited until to get him around pick 180 or something like that as my SP3, or maybe my SP4. But if he's my SP4, SP5, then that's a risk that I'm willing to take. There's a little bit you got to limit it a little bit because he's on the Pirates, so the wins aren't necessarily going to be there. But if the Ks are there, it could be good. It could be sweet, Dave.
All right, Alex at AJT126 asks, third brace ADP fascinates him. People seem to be ignoring 2020. Chris Bryan is going in round 8 ahead of Donaldson and Moustakas. Already talked about them. Then Kyle Seager isn't going around until round 15, despite being the number 4 third baseman. I like this Alex guy because he hits on a lot of things, and I think you like him too because Chris Bryan is not a fan. We are not a fan of Chris Bryan. Chris
Bryan sucks.
Yeah, so Chris Bryan's ADP. Chris Bryan's ADP. Chris Bryant's ADP is number 14 at third base right now. Like you said, Moustakas is 17th, Donaldson 18, Sano's 22, Tommy Edman, Nunez, Justin Turner's 25, Cabrian Hayes. A lot of guys I'd rather wait on and take over him. So third base is going to be an interesting debate this season. But, yeah, I'm with you, Alex. It's crazy. Just ignore Chris Bryant.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a fine line, right? It's a fine line between paying attention to what happened this year and completely ignoring it. And so like Kyle Seager is a good example where one of the reasons why Kyle Seager had a bunch of value, I feel like he stole a bunch of bases this year. What did he have? He had 5 stolen bases in the shortened season. Compare that to, well, that's the highest he's had since 2015 in a season with 600 plus plate appearances. 2, 2, 2, 3, right? And he gets 5 last year. So you take those away, he hit 241, had a ton of runs in RBIs, but again, you know, those kind of go up and down depending on what's happening, some luck factors there. So yes, I mean, Kyle Seager is probably still a little bit underrated based on just the consistency of the profile. We still need to see where he ends up because I think he's a free agent after this year. Is that right? Is he a free agent after this year? That's actually, no, I think he's actually got one more year. Okay, never mind. So he's not a free agent. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's just a fine line. You just got to figure out and you got to dive into a player's profile. Chris Bryan is not as bad as he was this year, honestly. But at the same time, we now have 3 consecutive years of disappointment from Chris Bryan, from a lack of power, a lack of speed. The batting average hasn't been awful until this year, but he's really a guy who's only doing well because he's hitting first or second in that Cubs lineup. And should he still be doing that? I don't know. Probably not.
All right. Common Sense Fantasy Baseball asks, Pete Alonso going around pick 50, Josh Bell around 150, CJ Cron undrafted. Thoughts on that? Well, people know I'm not a Pete Alonso fan, so I'll pass on that no matter what at his ADP. I'm not in love with Josh Bell either. I don't hate it at that ADP, but I'd rather go Christian Walker. You mentioned Carlos Santana. I love CJ Cron. You've hinted at that earlier. He's undrafted in all 9 leagues right now. I have him circled. He won't make it back to me. I know it. I almost took him with my last pick. He won't make it back. But I have him definitely circled as a guy to bounce back with this season. Wants to see where he's playing. That's for starters. But first base, third base, a lot of these positions, they look deep now once we dig in and see roster constructions on real baseball teams. These positions might not be as good as we think they are. So what's your thoughts on those 3 guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about Alonso is once he starts falling back a little bit, he becomes interesting once again. I mean, he's probably not a guy that I'll go after, but it's not like he had a horrendous year this year, right? Like the skills are all relatively the same. Slight dip in contact rate, you know, but still for a power hitter like he is, fine. The hard hit rate was down a little bit. The BABIP was down 40 points. You know, he hit 231, but he still hit 16 home runs. And you multiply that by 3 and you're looking at another 48 home run season. And he was really getting going when the season ended. So again, like, you know, I just didn't like him around pick 30. And I think like, if you ask me, who would you rather have, Pete Alonso at 50 or Matt Olson at 72? I'd probably go with Pete Alonso just because I just think, consistency wise, like the batting average, I think has a higher ceiling. So I'm not as worried about that. The other guys, I mean, Josh Bell is a really hard guy to put a finger on. I mean, people have mentioned this. I can't remember which podcast I was listening to. It might've been the Launch Angle, but that he might get to non-tendered next year, which I think is a very real possibility, right? Who knows where he's going to be. I mean, he was really, really, really bad this year. And then I think with Kron, again, it's going to depend, like Bubba, you mentioned, like where he ends up. I think he signed a one-year deal with Detroit. So it's all going to be like whether he has opportunity to get plate appearances. And I think what you're going to get with him is what you know, like 240, 250, maybe a little bit better than that, and 30 home runs if he plays a full season. So, yeah, I mean, he represents the biggest opportunity for value, I think. But I don't, like, hate the idea of Alonso, you know, especially going around there, because I think he's an elite power guy who doesn't necessarily hurt you in batting average.
All right, I'm really afraid to ask this question because we're already going long.
Oh, but, God, Bubba.
At Comac Du asks,
oh, Cody.
How can a club run away with the Premier League, improve during the summer transfer window, and subsequently lose to Aston Villa 7-2? Follow-up question, yeah. Why will the Spurs win the league this year? He's obviously a Tottenham fan. Thank you for your insight and analysis on this relevant topic.
For all you English Premier League lovers, I'm a big Liverpool fan. I have been for a long time, so please don't call me a bandwagon rider. But if you want to do that, that's fine, because we're a beautiful team to watch and we're incredible. But we lost 7-2, our worst loss in the history of the Premier League, which started in 1990, I believe. You know what happened, Cody? Three deflection goals. So there was three deflection goals. Our number one keeper was not in. Our defense was in shambles because they didn't trust the goalie. And everything that could have possibly gone wrong went wrong. And so we lost 7-2. And hopefully, just like the last time we lost big, which was against your Spurs, after that period of time, we became the greatest team in Europe. And we beat you guys in the Champions League. So there you go, Cody.
All right. Draft Champions Podcasts asks, what do you do after the top seven closers? When you're looking to grab your when are you looking to grab your relief pitcher too, since there's so much unknown, and do you have any late guys that are free now?
I don't have any guys that are late that are free late now. I need to dive into it. But you know, I think that like after the top seven closers, there's plenty of good options. I got Richard Rodriguez from the Pirates at pick 222. Mayers from the Angels, who, you know, should be there again next year and clearly has the confidence of Joe Maddon, you know, and developed a cutter. Jeff Zimmerman wrote that up. I had him on a couple teams towards the end of the season before he became the closer, just because he was doing so well. But like that's not an example of a guy who I think went around 230, 240 in our draft. So there's going to be guys, and I mean, it happens every year, right? Closers are going super pushback. And then when there's a little bit more definition on their roles, then they push forward. But I just think that we see year in and year out that, you know, there are guys that emerge, right? Every single year out of nowhere to be really good guys. And in a longer season, we have more time to find those guys. And to stash them and to take a different approach to save. So again, I think you want 1 to 2 guys who have the role right now. And I think it's fine to speculate. And especially I think the number of saves that you need to compete is going to continue to go down because guys are getting smarter and using the bullpen. So I don't have any ideas now, but I think as I dive in, I think there will be plenty of guys who kind of jump out as potential values, especially early on here in draft champions leagues. And that's one of the reasons why I haven't done a draft champions league yet, is because really, I'm just kind of shooting from whatever the side of my pants or whatever it's called, because it's shooting from the hip right now. Like, I'm just kind of like searching through players and picking. I haven't like looked through and not rank. I never rank guys, but like thinking about those clusters of value or where I think different guys are going to go, or who do I need to have on my team? Who do I not? Where do I need to get stolen bases? You know, I didn't even think about that in this draft. So, again, those are things that I think I need to look at. I think I need to see some projections as well. But like from a closer perspective, like there's guys every year that are coming out of places. And after the first few weeks of fab, when people have like blown their fab or they have solidly saves and they just kind of move on, I think we're in good shape. So don't pay for saves.
Yeah. In our league, for instance, a majority of the big guys were all gone by like pick 100, 115. So I got stuck out there watching. And after about pick 180, almost all the important ones were gone. So if you wait that late, then you're just going to start playing the game and playing the waiver wire later. That's just the way it looks right now. At least in our league, guys went really early. Looking at the ADPs, you know, 15 closers went in the top 190. So it'll be something to keep an eye on as things go. Guys got really aggressive on closers, to me, it felt like, in the draft. But we'll have to kind of wait and see as more happens. Less than Dave at Run DMCD asks, what will you be looking at in terms of takeaways from 2020 season? Which stats do you think are legitimate and which aren't you putting much stock into? How heavily will you weigh 2019 comparatively?
Yeah. I think we addressed a lot of this in the last podcast, just kind of like takeaways from the last season. So I won't go into too much depth there, but I think it's, I think in every single scenario, it's all individual player. Like, you know, I think we can take a broad brush strokes. Like if you were to ask me, like, what are you going to rely more on, 2019 or 2020? It's going to be 2019, like just a much larger sample. But, you know, and it's just like anything else. I think there's going to be the extremes where it's very clear that there were guys in 2020 that were just off, right? Like Michael Conforto is a good example where it's like, okay, the skills are exactly the same, but his BABIP was much higher. I'm not going to pay a higher price for that. Like maybe he moves up a little bit, but, you know, I'm not going to move him up 60 picks. So there are those guys who are kind of at the extremes that are pretty easy to navigate and figure out whether you want them or not. And that doesn't mean you're right on them or not, because sometimes these small sample sizes can have meaning, or it can turn into something, or, you know, we just never know what's going to happen year to year. But I'll put much more of an emphasis on 2019. I think this is a situation where I rely on projections a lot of times, like as just a baseline, and then I kind of go from there. And I think people who rely on projections are going to be in really good shape this year. Because I think, you know, people who are going to use those kind of data-driven methodologies to figure out approximate player values and then kind of move up and down based on plate appearances and lineup and situation and more recent trends and things like that are going to be in a position to do well. That's my personal perspective. I think I could be totally wrong on that, but that's kind of what I think is going to happen. So I'm really looking forward to the way that the projection systems handle that. And kind of, you know, I think it'll be a really good time to do meta projection, where you don't just look at one projection system, but you look at a few of them, you know, aggregated. ATC does that already, but kind of looking at a few of them to see the way that they approach it and to kind of combine those and blend those. So that's what I'll kind of plan on doing. So, but we touched on a lot of the lessons learned on the last pod. So I won't go down there, and it's late, and I know Bubba wants to go to bed because he's got a little baby.
Yeah, it's 2019 is much more important. I'll say it many times this offseason. 2020 will be a grain of salt situation. I will look at the StatCast data quite well because there's some sticky numbers there. Your barrels, your hard hits, you can look at and get ideas that might be legit, might not be. But you're going to have to kind of look at it all and in the end kind of make your decision. I think you said the projections will be good. We know – like Jeff Erickson and a lot of guys use 3-year rolling averages. Maybe you do 3 years and then throw 2020 on top of it. So it's like 3.5-year rolling averages. Or you do a 3-year rolling average with 18, 19, 20. I don't know. But to take 20 by itself and weigh it too heavily, I think it's going to be the wrong way to go about it. So you'll get more trouble than good in the long run in that scenario. All right. Billy B from Canada at Bill Bradley 44 asks, which one of these three two baggers are you higher on for 2020 and beyond for dynasty leagues? Kevin Biggio, Keston Hira, or Brandon Lau?
It would depend on the format. So what I would say...
In standard format, just shoot from the hip.
Standard format. I think Brandon Lau would probably be last. In all of those scenarios, I think if it were a batting average league, I would probably lean towards Hira because I think the ceiling is higher and the batting average floor is similar. And I think there's more speed there, but I haven't looked at how many stolen bases they had, but the power is a lot more. And then in OBP, I would lean to Biggio. That's what I would say.
Yeah, most definitely with Biggio in the OBP format. He's close to me with Hira. I'm a Hira believer. There were some scary things this year that obviously I'll look at last year's numbers, but it's that strikeout rate's got to get better. It's got to get better. That was scary this year, but the hard hits are still good. So there's a lot to like there at Kesson here. There's no doubt about that. He's got to work on that off-speed pitch quite a bit. But Biggio's a stud. He improved this year, and I think if we keep seeing improvements, that's going to be a guy to be a big, big fan of. And we talked Lau on the show. Great talent. He's another guy that jumped quite a bit in ADP, so I have to keep an eye on that. Andrew Armour, at Andrew Armour 1, can you name a few pitchers to target after pick 200 that can provide potential league-winning value? Well, I'll be honest, that's tough to say at this point in the situation, but I can pull up the old starting pitcher thing and figure it out. Do you have any that you've seen past 200 on the
Well, I'll scroll through here right now. Andrew, I'd go back.
Pick 200.
I would actually go and listen to our last podcast. I think we actually touched on a lot of later round pitchers that we really like. I do think Musgrove is one example. I think Tristan McKenzie is another example, although Jeff Zimmerman in his Mining the News had a great piece on how his velocity decreased. Like his skills were still really good, but his velocity decreased as he started more and more. And so that's something to monitor, but he looked really, really good. And we know what has been possible from the Indians pitchers. John Means is another guy who looked great towards the end of the season. Earlier on in the season, his skills were showing some dramatic improvements, again, a velocity increasing guy. So there's potential there. Although obviously there are still some warts to be seen in that particular situation. Do you have any on the top of your mind? I like
the Means call. That's a big one. But a guy that Chris Clegg wrote an article about today, and I've seen others talk about him throughout this last season, and he had a sub-4 ERA pitch for the Phillies, and the strikeout rate ballooned up this year. Zach Eflin could be very interesting at pick 230. He started using that curveball so much more. I know Alex Fast was talking about him quite a bit and gifting him a lot when he pitched. If he keeps using that off-speed pitch the way he is and developing it even more, he could be quite interesting as a later-round option. You know, I've always been a believer in Michael Pineda. He's going to have some rough starts, but he has tons of strikeout upside. He's going to be playing for the Twins. That's going to score a ton of runs. So I don't hate that either. There's a lot of interesting names here, that guys that you could see if they turn things around. That could be quite, quite interesting down here.
Ooh, Baba. Drew Smyly.
I saw Drew him. Like, I did not say him. I left Drew him for you.
Smyly. Ryan Yarbrough.
Yep.
Ryan Yarbrough is another one. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys. I should go through my I feel like that's my whole queue at this point. It's just like late round guys I like. Like Alex Reyes is going. I don't think he's gone in any of these.
No, he's not.
Davey Garcia is going super late as well. Josh Lindblom hasn't gone. Matthew Boyd is going super late. And again, there's danger there, but there's also, we saw towards the end of the season, you know, how he can turn that around. So I think there's a lot of, they're certainly risky, but I think there's a lot of later round guys that are going to push up as people familiarize themselves a little bit more with the pool. I think they're going to move up a bunch.
Yeah, a couple more to keep an eye on, and we'll move on from this. We saw Griffin Canning actually started pitching much better in the second half. Velocity came back. Be a guy to monitor in spring because, you know, he's going to pick 264 here. Last year, before he got hurt, was one of the big-time pitchers that people were up high on. So he's interesting. I'm always a Mitch Keller fan. He came back from the IL and actually had a couple good starts to finish out the season. He'll be a guy to monitor. And the third one, I said it a lot last year. I say it in DFS all the time when he pitches. The talent is outstanding. Strikeout rate's not ideal yet. We've seen it good at times. He walks too many people, and that's Dylan Cease. If he ever figures out control, he can balloon up the standings in a big way. So that'll be one to watch as well.
Ooh, which is a really good point because the White Sox just replaced their manager, but they also replaced their pitching coach. Don Cooper, who had been there since 2002. And I think that's really important because they've really struggled recently to develop their pitchers. I think they're way behind in analytics. I tweeted this, but if you remember, Giolito actually had to leave the White Sox organization. Not like he had to leave the organization, but he went to his high school pitching coach to regain the velocity and make the changes that they needed to. And I think that could be really good for a guy like Cease, who has that velocity. I think Eno Saris has talked before about how the spin rate just is there's cut on it and it makes the fastball less effective, even though he's got that velo. He's even got the changeup that has some potential. And so I definitely keep my eyes on him and Reynaldo Lopez as well. You know, guys like that who just haven't really developed the way that people were hoping that they would develop. Those are some interesting guys to just kind of monitor. And velocity is always the key. Velocity, velocity, velocity. Monitor those minor, those spring training velocity numbers and look for guys, because oftentimes those are the guys that will take the jump. And we saw that again this year. Gausman's a perfect example. He's plus 1 mile per hour on his fastball, up to 95 on average.
We'll have to see who goes to driveline this year with COVID. We'll see. I don't know how they're going to do things like they used to, but that was a major factor last year too. Kershaw and a bunch of guys went to driveline. Velocity was up. We saw the results. Like Alex Wood, even though he was hurt, another guy we didn't talk about with Dodgers guys, potential starting pitchers. Like, here's another one. They got their velocity up, and when they were pitching, they were very, very good. So we'll have to see how that pans out, but it'll be definitely something to monitor and something we'll definitely talk about in the coming weeks. But Toby, that'll wrap us up this week. Any final thoughts? As by this time next week, we should have the mocks all wrapped up.
No, thanks everybody for listening. I really appreciate it, especially in the off season. I mean, I know there's a lot of great fantasy football podcasts and podcasts about other things in the world outside of sports. So really appreciate you guys listening. Bubba and I are going to be on the Pole Hitter podcast with Rob DiPietro, who won the Draft Champions League. So shout out to Rob. We're going to both be on there tomorrow night. Tuesday night. So that's going to be hitting, I think, probably on Wednesday, people's podcast. So definitely check that out. We'll share it. Thanks, Bubba. I appreciate you staying up late with me.
Okay. No worries at all. No worries at all. It works out great. And the podcast with Rob should be pretty cool. The outline looks great. So people give that a listen, and we'll tweet it out like usual. But thanks for listening, everybody. Check out Toby on Twitter at BatFlipCrazy. I'm at BD Intric. Bubba and the BatFlip 53 in the books. Catch you guys next week.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.